702 car feature.
It's now 26 minutes to 3 o'clock, and it means that it's a standing appointment with Talking Cars. And today we feature Nicole Lowell, the technical editor at Car Magazine, and it's all about the technical challenges you might have with your car. Maybe there's a there's smoke of a particular color, maybe there's a sound that you've observed, or it's just not the same car that you've become used to. What is wrong with it is the question. Well, Nicole always dispenses great advice. So here's your chance to ask him questions about your car, around those technical questions that might be frustrating you. So it's 011-883-0702. You can also send them via SMS. It's 31702. And our WhatsApp and voice note line is 072-702-1702. Call early, because we always run out of time. So Nicole, today we're talking about the choice of what? 93 VS 95 octane petrol here at the Reef. So what is best suited for our car's engines?
Hi, Azania. Hi, listeners. Yes, I've conducted a four-page tech article on this exact question in the September issue of Car Magazine, currently on the shelves.
Mm.
So I'll quickly just run through the details. So 93, 95 octane fuel. So if you drive a petrol vehicle at the Reef, then you have to make this decision every time you fill up. So just a bit of background information. Energy content of fuel. There's no difference between the energy content of 93 versus 95. So some people think I put in 95, I get more bang for my buck. That is not true. Same energy content. 93 is obviously a bit cheaper as well, 15 cents. So you might be losing out by not choosing 93, but let's just get into the details. So octane is actually the resistance of fuel against auto-ignition or knock. So that is a combustion event that is really harmful for your engine. Where a petrol engine normally ignites the air-fuel mixture with a spark from the spark plug, and that's actually a relatively slow burn to release all the energy. When knock happens, that's explosion. So that actually will damage your engine components. And now during wide open throttle, so if you drive, you want maximum performance from your engine, that's when your in-cylinder pressures are the highest.
Yeah.
And that is when this event can occur. And now where the notion comes from that 95 will give you more power is in a petrol engine, when you're at wide open throttle, so you demand maximum power, your ignition timing does play a big role in how much power output the engine actually gives you. So if you've got a higher octane fuel, you can advance ignition timing, or the engine control unit will do it in modern car, and you get a bit more power out.
Mm-hmm.
But now this study has shown that if you drive a naturally aspirated engine car at the Reef, so there's no turbocharger, no supercharger, then you can actually get away with 91 octane fuel.
What?
Even though we can't get it, you don't need even 93. So if you drive a car now in Gauteng, you want to fill up, it's naturally aspirated, there's no advantage of going for 95 over 93.
With no damage whatsoever to the engine and the parts.
No damage whatsoever, so you can save the 15 cent and just put in 93. No questions asked. If you drive a turbo engined vehicle, turbo or supercharger, which means your in-cylinder pressures are higher, then it makes a difference if you put in 95. If you're somebody that needs maximum performance from your engine, I mean, this now means that your foot's flat, you're drag racing from robot to robot, whatever, and you want the last bit of performance, then it might be worthwhile going for 95, because as I mentioned, you'll get a bit of more advanced timing in your engine, you get a bit more power out. But if you drive a turbo car, but you're not so worried about the last percentage of performance, and you drive it normally sedately, then even 93 would be fine for you as well.
I see.
So I just think there's a lot of people that fill 95 just because they think it's a superior product than 93, but don't realize it's actually not doing anything for them. They're just paying the extra 15 cents a liter for nothing.
So why is it more expensive then?
Yeah, so it is more expensive because octane costs money. So to get that specification of fuel for the refineries, for the oil companies, it's more expensive to produce. So obviously when you talk about racing, if you go racing, and especially if it's turbo engines, then you can go up to 102 octane and so on, but you can't buy that for your normal road car, and you need a racing license and all that. So if it sounded a bit technical, then you can get your hands on a car magazine and read the whole copy there. It will make more sense.
Yeah.
But make sure that when you fill up, you don't pay for something you don't use.
Yes. Well, if I could get it, Nicole, and I'm not a car fundi at all, I think that was a good explanation. And it's quite a common question that we get. Let's see what other questions we have for this afternoon. The lines are open to you on 011-883-0702. Tulani, we'll start with you. You're out in Edenvale. What's going on with your car?
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
A pleasure.
Basically, it's a Golf. It's a Golf 7R. Mm. So it's a 2015 model, and I drove the car for about 2 months or 3 months. And when it went through for the first service, I was experiencing some vibrations. You know, vibrations that would be throughout the car, but eventually it concentrated on the left hand side, the front left hand side.
Mm.
And as we speak, the car has been with the dealership since the last 7 months. You know,
what
they tried exactly? Yeah. So they've tried. They've got me to change tires, change rims, do road force balancing on the car. It's been, you know, they've tried whatever they can to actually resolve the vibration on the car. And eventually, you know, it went to their plant and back, and still, you know, the problem is still there. So,
what could it be? Yes. So, what was the history of the car before you bought it? Because this started 3 months into you driving it.
Yeah, it was actually a brand new car. So, when I bought the car, it was a brand new car, and when it went for the first
service,
I experienced the problem slightly, reported it, but no one could help me with it. And it's now actually on 60. The mileage is on 60, but, you know, they're failing to actually resolve it from. As I said, it's been 7 months with them. You know, really, you know, how to solve the problem.
Nicole, and all this time has gone by. You know, when you think of the Consumer Protection Act and the time he would have had to change his mind about this problem, you know, much of it is gone. So, what could the problem be? Shaking from the front left of the vehicle.
Yeah, it's very interesting, and it's a pity that it couldn't have been sorted out by now. Mm-hmm. Just to clarify this, if it's a warranty issue, VW should sort it out. And as you mentioned, if it happened 3 months into the purchase of the car, CPA would come into play. And there's a lot of, it's more a legal issue almost than a technical one, because they should have fixed the issue or supplied another vehicle in to that extent.
Mm.
But now you're in a situation where you haven't got a car. I would say, just thinking about vibration, what it can be. The Golf R is a four-wheel drive vehicle. The obvious ones would be wheel balance, brake discs, and then all the other rotating parts as well, which includes drive shafts. Because obviously if it happened in a brand new car, it always sounds to me like a factory defect. If something went wrong during the build of that car.
Mm.
And it needs to be sorted out. So, the best people to sort it out is VW themselves. And if it went to the factory as well and sorted out, I'm really surprised, because they could theoretically almost, change all the rotating parts, change the drive shaft, change the diff, change all that can actually influence vibrations. Because when we talked about vibrations, you also need to determine, is it a vibration actually linked to your engine speed? Then it's sort of engine-related vibrations, or is it linked to road speed, which means then wheels, drive shafts, and so on. So that they need to determine. But, that's not for you to do. It's a brand-new car. It's under warranty. VW just need to sort it out, and it's a pity it took 7 months.
Maybe we should start engaging the ombudsman on this one, especially.
Yeah, or send us an email here at CAR, and I would also forward it to my contacts, because it doesn't sound, normally VW is very good in sorting out these issues, so I'm quite surprised.
All right. So, Tulani, just stay on the line, pass your email. We'll connect you with Nicole via my producer, okay?
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, because it might be time to contact the ombudsman on this. Michael in Morningside. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon. Yeah. Hello.
Hi.
Azania and Nico. Yeah. So I bought a Jeep, a Jeep Wrangler recently. And I think you've partly answered my story. It pulls slightly to the left. I've had the wheel alignment checked. I've had the wheels balanced twice. At 95 kilometers an hour, I get quite a violent shudder. And then it just goes into a vibration after that 100. And up to about 120, then the vibration is almost non-existent.
After 120, it's non-existent?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So between 95 kilometers and 120.
It's a Wrangler. I don't drive that fast.
Yeah.
Generally, I drive about 105, yeah.
Okay. So, Nicole, what's going on?
Yeah, again, it sounds very similar to the issue we just discussed. So you're saying that it starts at like 120
or 95.
Yeah, 95 to 120. So that definitely sounds vehicle speed related. So the balancing of the wheels is the first thing to do, and then check the brake disc as well. If the vibration worsens when you put your foot lightly on the brake, that sort of points towards your brake system. If not, obviously the Wrangler has also got a lot of drive shafts that come into play. So it might even be a drive shaft as well that's giving you problems. So I would investigate those.
Okay.
Cool. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's Michael in Morningside. That brake situation, I think, was quite insightful, that when you press on the brakes, if it still continues to shake and shudder like that, then it indicates the brakes. I'm not going to forget that one.
It will definitely wiggle in your hands if it's a brake shudder. When you put your foot lightly on the brake, it's very clear. And if you take your foot off, the vibration will go away. So that's clearly brakes then.
Okay. Alan in Glen Vista, hello.
Hi, it's Alan speaking. We bought a new Cougar, a 2-liter Cougar. It's called an Echo Boost, but this car is everything but light on fuel. It's running at about 12.4 liters to 100 kilometers, and it's claimed to be doing 7.3. We've complained, but nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
The car's brand new. We bought it in February. It's got 11,000 kilometers on the clock, and they said we should go 5,000 and the car would be running. But it's just very, very expensive to run this car.
So what do you mean? They said you must go up to 5,000?
No, they said we should drive the car to 5,000 kilometers, then the car would be loose, or the engine would be loose, and it wouldn't be that heavy on fuel.
But it's now
11,000 kilometers on, and it's just as heavy on fuel.
All right. Nicole, any thoughts on the Ford Cougar 2-liter?
Yeah, just a question. So it's a 2-liter petrol. It's a 177 kilowatt version. Is that correct?
Yes, that's the right one, yeah.
Okay.
Just a general question on fuel consumption. Obviously, the figure that you get from the suppliers or the NEDC figure, we talked about that before. It's a very conservative figure. We at Car Magazine add 20% just right from the start, because we know that's a laboratory figure that's done under controlled conditions. There's no aircon, there's no lights, there's no nothing. It's a very sedate cycle they drive it on. So the figure that you get on the window sticker, unfortunately, that's you'll very, very seldom see that figure in real life. So that's number one. And then your driving style plays the biggest role in fuel consumption. So if you're an aggressive driver, you'll use double the fuel of somebody that's driving conservatively. So I'll just put that out there. I've actually got a Cougar 1.5 turbo petrol long-term test car at the moment, which is also relatively heavy on petrol. I would say I get around 10 liters per 100, which is not great. I would expect it a bit less than that.
Yeah.
The 2-liter, you would expect to be use more fuel than the 1.5. It's obviously a bit performance-orientated with actually the Focus ST motor in there. But that's unfortunately one of those things with the turbo petrols. If you use the performance, you pay for the fuel. We had a Cougar 2-liter TDCi, the diesel version, on test, and that was uses a lot less fuel. So diesel has about 6-7 liters per 100, which is considerably less that you can use in a petrol vehicle.
Wow.
So all I can say is change your drive style if possible. If you want to see what it can do, take it on the freeway, drive 100 kilometers per hour, switch your aircon off. Do constant speed, drive really, really carefully. I mean, obviously, zero your trip computer and so on, and do like 50 or 100 Ks in that state, and check your onboard computer reading. That is sort of the best figure that you will get. And I've seen in my Cougar, for instance, I can do 7.5 at that. I mean, it's a bit unrealistic condition. Because when you get into town and the stop-start driving, whatever, that soon rises to above 10 liters per 100.
Got
so that's unfortunately just
Got
one
you.
Of those things.
All right, so you almost mimic the test conditions that gave them that conservative figure.
Yeah, you just to see that your car can do it, but it's almost impossible to achieve in real life.
Yeah. All right, Nicole, let's take a break. When we come back, more of your calls. Alan, I hope that was a good enough guideline. I can understand why you're so pissed off, because even with that 20%, if you add 20% to that 7.3 liters that they've promised, it takes it just under 9. But yours is doing 12.4 liters for 100 kilometers. Maybe it's the driving style. I don't know.
702 Car Feature.
We're with Nicole Lowe this afternoon and we're talking cars, especially the technical problems that you may be having with your car. Let's go to you, Emmanuel. You're in Rustenburg. How are you doing?
I'm good, and you?
I'm good, Emmanuel. So what's your question for Nicole this afternoon?
My question is that I drive a 2007 2.4 Mitsubishi Colt Buggy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it tends to have a hard start in the morning. I've done all the service, changed the filters, put in new plugs, but it still does that. And also, it the consumption on the petrol, it's 100 liters in the tank, but when I drive about 200 kilometers, I've already 75% of the tank.
Yeah.
So I don't know. How can you help me? Because petrol is expensive.
Mm.
I pay close to 1,430 something for a full tank.
Yeah.
So imagine just to drive 200 kilometers to Mafikeng, I'm already on a quarter tank.
It doesn't get you there. Nicole, back to this fuel consumption.
It shows that it could be misfiring, but I can't identify what can be wrong. And the fan of the engine also. As soon as after I've started it, it goes off and it comes back again, the sign of the engine.
All right. Nicole, any thoughts on Emmanuel's problem?
Yeah, first he mentioned hard starting. So if he says the car is fully serviced, that's the first thing to do. So make sure everything is fully serviced. The engine is well looked after, all filters, everything is changed, spark plugs, as you mentioned. So that's a base to start from. You can also check the compression ratio of the engine to make sure you haven't got a lot of wear between the piston, cylinder rings and cylinders, to make sure that's all fine. And then obviously for hard starting, just make sure your battery is in good condition and it's also cranking at the correct speed.
Mm-hmm.
That you all need for your starting. If he says it's heavy on fuel, it's difficult again.
Mm-hmm.
If he mentions you put so much money in and you go thus far, the best way to measure fuel consumption, and I know this is probably impossible to do because it's so expensive these days to fill your tank, but that is the way to do it, is fill your tank, say, to the first click at the fuel station, drive, zero your auto, and then drive, and when you fill it again to the full position, because then you exactly know how much fuel you actually used for the kilometers you've driven. Because if you only put in 50 rands, 100 rands here, there, and you actually don't know how much fuel is going in, how much you're using for the kilometers you drive. So it's very hard to say then, oh, is it heavy on fuel or is it not heavy on fuel? Because you can't make an accurate calculation. But the engine should be running fine as well. If he mentions misfiring and all those kind of things, it means the engine is running inefficiently and it will use more fuel than it's supposed to. So first, make sure that the engine is running 100% fine. And then I can't mention enough, drive style influences your fuel consumption a lot. And then we talked about all the other things like, a heavy vehicle, a buggy is a heavy, big vehicle.
Mm.
It does take a lot of energy to move it around. And its air resistance is quite big. And and also your tire pressures, you need to have your tires at optimum pressure. Don't carry any extra weight in the buggy, like in the load bay. You don't use any roof racks, any of those things of your car.
Sure.
Take it off. So there's a lot you can do fuel consumption-wise. But to start off with a buggy and think you're going to get very good fuel consumption is a bit unrealistic.
Okay. There you are, Emmanuel. To me, let's squeeze you in quickly. You have a motorbike question. Hi.
Hi, Azamina. Hi, Nicole. I just wanted to find out on bike, the 93 and 95
octane
type of petrol.
Yeah.
Does it really make a difference? Because our bikes are naturally aspirated, so
okay.
I ride a Harley. So, do I really need to be bothering about 93 and 95?
Okay, brilliant. Yes, Nicole?
Yes, so same applies as with engines in cars. So if you're at the coast, there's no decision to be made because there's only 95 available. If you're in Gauteng, you're at high altitudes. Joburg is 1,700 meters. No point in a naturally aspirated engine of using 95. You can use 93, it's 100% fine. Especially for a Harley, that engine is very under stress. There's not a high compression ratio, not a performance engine. But even performance engines at Joburg altitude should be 100% fine on 93. Okay. You don't need 95.
Perfect, perfect. Nicole, as always, thank you so much for your help.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And if you want to find out more about this 93 versus 95 octane petrol here for us in the Highveld, then you can read up on it in Car Magazine. And Nicole has done an extensive piece on it.